This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 187, where we're going to catch up on the latest cloud news, recorded live Thursday, March the 30th, 2017. While many IT teams struggle with the impact of deploying Office 365, Zscaler customers are experiencing 40% or greater network performance across file download times, as well as TCP and DNS connection times, compared to using next-gen firewalls and UTMs to route Office 365 traffic locally to the internet. While you may know Zscaler is a leader in cloud security, they also have hundreds of customers who are processing over 1.2 petabytes of Office 365 traffic monthly through the Zscaler cloud. Visit www.zscaler.com to learn more. Good morning, AC. How's it going? AC? Hello? Oh, AC's not here. Oh well, let's carry on. You're going to be stuck with me by the looks of it. AC is traveling this week and is up in rainy Redmond, where I am as well. He can't make it with me today, but we're going to catch up a little later in the week and chat about what's going on in the world of Microsoft. So for this week, you're going to be stuck with me, and we're going to talk through, or I'm going to talk through some of the latest cloud news that we've got from Microsoft around Office and Azure. As always, we love hearing from you guys. If you want to get on the Twitter or on Facebook, go and hit us up. We'd love to hear some of your questions, concerns, just topics for discussion and ideas of what you'd like us to discuss on the show. If we think your question is totally awesome, we will obviously answer it on the show, but we may even get you on the show. So head over there or onto our website, and where you can submit a question as well if you want to do that. Now, onto the news. I've got a couple of items this week, all from Microsoft, mostly around Office and Azure. The first one of which is around Skype for Business. We're big Skype for Business users here at Hyperfish. We have it deployed. We're a small company, mind you, but it's a great solution for us, being able to call each other while we're out of the office, obviously, but also inbound and outbound calling through PSTN or plain old telephone service, POTS, I think, another way to call that, you know, out to mobile numbers, landlines, that sort of thing. So Microsoft adding some new features to Skype for Business. Now, these are features that have been possible on-premises in the past, but were lacking from their online offering. And this kind of really ups the ante in their quest for VoIP dominance against the likes of new challenges in the space from Amazon and Google and so forth. So adding two new features, the auto-attendant feature, that means that you can automate answering a call and route it into various queues and bits and pieces. And that gives you the ability to, you know, say, when a call is coming into my business, what do I do with it? Where do I answer it? Some of those calls that come in don't necessarily just go to one person, right? It might depend on who's available and so forth. And so that's where the second feature, the call queues capability, comes in, where an incoming call could be routed to a person, and then based on a set of rules, or if they're not available, then it would move to the next person and so forth in the order that's defined and things. And that's something that's kind of sorely lacking from the service at the moment. And one of the reasons, for example, we couldn't use Skype for Business for our main office phone line, for example, because we obviously wanted, when somebody called, to be able to route it to different people based on who was available and who was in the office and things like that. So those will be two great features coming. Microsoft announced them at the Enterprise Connect conference in Orlando on March the 27th. I'm not 100% sure about the rollout of those. We'll need to follow up on that, but it'll be coming to Office 365 plans, enterprise plans, I imagine. E5s is where they're putting most of their Skype for Business sort of more advanced features like inbound and outbound calling and PSTN things. So stay tuned for that. Skype for Business is actually, you know, for all of the grief it gets, their online service, Skype for Business Online, is actually pretty solid for us. We've had a really good experience with it, and it works really well. So I would definitely go and have a read about that. Next, co-authoring in Excel. So this is in Office, obviously, more in Office 365, I should say. And being a little sarcastic here, I feel like they announce co-authoring in Excel every few months. And this is something I've been really confused about in the past. But apparently, co-authoring in Excel has really only been a major thing in the Excel web applications. But what they've announced is the ability to do co-authoring with your friends and colleagues and so forth in Excel documents on the desktop Excel client. So this sort of further extends the co-authoring story across the Office applications like Word and PowerPoint, and now bringing that to Excel as well. So again, in the past, you've been able to open up an Excel document, have a couple of people in a doc at the same time, and be able to go to town on it, so long as you were doing it through the Excel web application. And this was fine, right? So long as everybody was in the Excel web app. If you ended up opening the Excel document in the web app and then somebody else opened it on the desktop, you'd end up getting a whole bunch of shenanigans going on and people being locked out and not being able to edit things at the same time and so forth. So so co-authoring is coming to the Excel desktop client. That said, it's only on Windows to begin with, but they are working on bringing it to Excel for the Mac, for example. But co-authoring was already available for Excel Online, like I mentioned, Excel on Android, Windows Mobile on iOS, but they're also working on it for the Mac. So for those Mac users out there listening to this, same old, same old. You're the last to get the new stuff, unfortunately. But that's the world of Microsoft on Mac at the moment. Still, they are doing a pretty good job on the Mac, especially over the last couple of years, right? They've really revamped Office. They're getting a bunch of new apps on there. Obviously, their iOS store is really solid. And so they're paying more attention to it than they have in more recent memory, or sort of medium-term memory, I should say. Okay, Microsoft Bookings. We've spoken about this on the show a couple of times. This is Microsoft's Office 365 offering to let businesses manage their bookings. If you're a company that takes bookings from customers, like, they use a pet grooming example in the blog post, but it could be, you know, it could be lawn care or a hairdresser or what have you. Anybody that deals with bookings from their customers, Microsoft Bookings is available in Office 365 to help you do that. It's a part of Office 365. Now, I believe it was only in certain SKUs, but Microsoft Bookings is now rolling out, it's rolling out worldwide. That's part of this new announcement. But also, they're bringing it to the Office 365 Business Premium subscribers, which is quite nice. It sort of makes it available to more people and more Office 365 customers, whereas in the past, it was limited to some of the other SKUs. Also, only used to be available to the US and Canadian customers, but is now rolling out more worldwide. So that is Microsoft Bookings. Now, I'm a little bit of a skeptic about this because a lot of companies like hairdressers and so forth already have really sophisticated, well, maybe not sophisticated is the right word, very deeply rooted applications to manage their customers, manage their bookings and billing and so forth. So I think Microsoft Bookings is probably better suited at those that are more simple type booking scenarios, maybe one or two man shops, things like that. So Microsoft Bookings, go check that out. OneNote is getting some updates as well. They've added the ability to do Ink Math Assistant improvements, they call it. So you can start writing mathematical equations in OneNote and then have OneNote translate that, or I guess interpret that into math equations, and they'll do graphing and all sorts of things based on the equation that you write in with ink, which is pretty sweet. Now, this actually goes to a slightly larger point, I think, that we should at some point chat more deeply about, that OneNote is doing very well in education, and that's kind of been their big thrust over the last couple of years, I guess, 2 to 3 years, has been pushing OneNote into education. And it's a really great tool for that. So I think these things like the improvements around the math assistant and graphing and notes for students is obviously a great move in that direction. Okie doke. What else have we got here? We have got another piece of news from the Office 365 team. They blogged a blog on they posted a blog on March the 10th, actually, now, which says, introducing the new Office 365 profile experience. Now, this is kind of a topic near and dear to my heart. Obviously, I co-founded Hyperfish on the premise that people information is one of the most important assets in a business, and that it is sorely lacking in many businesses. And you only have to use Office 365 for a few minutes before you start noticing the number of places that information about people shows up. That could be anything from, you know, your profile photo in the top right-hand corner, all the way through to, you know, full profiles in Delve, for example, or just little things like presence icons and hover over cards and things like that in various places through SharePoint and so forth. Or it could be in the Office client applications, like in Outlook, the contact cards. Those things are viewed tens and tens and tens of millions of times a month by Office 365 customers. And all too often, they empty. Obviously, that's a bit of a problem for connecting with people, finding more about somebody that's just sent you an email, finding somebody with skills or expertise in a business. And Microsoft understands this as well. They're pushing sort of richer profile experiences in Office 365 to help combat some of that. Today, you know, the Delve profile was probably the richest profile experience, you know, the richest location that you would go to find out information about somebody and their documents they'd been working on and a little bit about their profile. But obviously that was quite hard to find for the average user in many cases. And so what Office 365 are doing is rolling out some new, what they call extended profile card experiences into Office 365. When they say across Office 365, that's a little disingenuous. What they're really doing is rolling it out into SharePoint, OneDrive, or SharePoint and OneDrive, I should say. So things like people's team sites and OneDrive, when you go and view a document, you can click on a person and get more information about them. They made some improvements to a small contact card experience on the right-hand side of the page when you clicked on somebody's name, but now you can click on a link that says View More and you'll get a wider pop-out card about that person with tabs along it to say, here's the contact information, here's the information about them, here's where they are in the organization with an org chart, kind of rudimentary org chart at least, and some of the recent files that they've been working on. Like I said, that's all well and good if you've got the information. A lot of this comes from Azure Active Directory, which for many customers comes from on-premises Active Directory. And if you don't have your data all buttoned up there, then obviously you won't get the greatest of experiences with all these new spots in Office 365 that people profile information is showing up. So if you do have that problem, obviously a bit of a plug for my own product, but definitely get in touch with me about Hyperfish and we'll show you what we can do to help you with that stuff. But it's really nice to see Office 365 focusing on building more or delivering more people-centric experiences across the board. And I hope that these new people cards or profile cards go much more broadly across the offering into the Office client applications, for example, all the way across through Skype and obviously the online experiences as well, like in Oa and in, you know, Planner and so forth, as well as the SharePoint experiences. Obviously, it helps us, right? As from a Hyperfish point of view, the more places people information show up, the more people will notice that their directory data is poor and lacking and their profile data is poor and lacking, and we'll be able to help them out. So I'm a little bit biased in this, but really nice to see new people experiences popping up. Slightly different, but still on the Office 365 side of the fence, Exchange Online are adding this new archive folder for users, and it's causing a little bit of turmoil, I would say. Obviously, Exchange Online has a bunch of kind of archival type features already for retaining information for long periods for compliance and governance reasons and so forth. But Exchange Online are adding this new thing called an archive folder, which will pop up into Office 365 mailboxes. And I'm guessing that this is driven from the archive button in Oa and also in the Outlook for iOS. I think it's on Android as well. But you know, in used to be the Acompli application that Microsoft bought and turned into Outlook for iOS and Android. But you get to right swipe or left swipe, depending on how you've got it configured, to do things like flag email or archive or delete it. And I'm guessing that this, you know, the right swipe or left swipe archive also will put the email in this archive folder. So archival and all the applications will ultimately stick mail in there. I think what's causing a little bit of consternation is that they've kind of done this for everybody, regardless of whether you wanted it or not. Just one of those choices they've decided to make. And so at the end of December, you're going to start noticing this archive folder start popping up into Exchange Online mailboxes. It actually made me go take a look at my own mailbox, and maybe you didn't even realize that this has popped up for you, but apparently this is where your one-click archiving email goes. So you can go check that out if you're an Exchange Online customer. I understand that it doesn't necessarily impact your storage requirements. Yeah, because, you know, overall you've still got storage and scalability limits in Office 365 and an Exchange Online that will impact this. But I believe that the sort of the max you can put in this is 50 gigs of data, which is a pretty big mailbox, let's be fair. I don't have 50 gigs of mail. I certainly hope people don't hit that limit. That'd be a hell of a lot of mail. I can imagine getting it at Microsoft. They send a lot of mail. But for me, that sounds pretty decent. And you can always go get more if you want as well. Okay, so before we carry on, let's break to talk to one of our fantastic sponsors of the show that we count on every week to make this show possible.
ShareGate makes it easier for organizations to adopt and use the latest Microsoft productivity tools, helping millions of users be happier and more productive at work. ShareGate is trusted by over 10,000 IT admins from over 110 countries to manage, migrate, and secure their SharePoint and Office 5 environments. ShareGate is recognized as the must-have tool for day-to-day administration of on-premises, cloud, and hybrid environments. Interested in learning more? Check us out at ShareGate.com to learn how ShareGate can make you more productive.
Okay, moving right along. We have some more news about Access Services, in fact. Chris McNulty, good friend of the show and of AC and I and longtime friend, put out a blog post on the Microsoft Tech community about the Access Services in SharePoint roadmap. Basically, making a long story short, they're dropping it. But much like their other deprecation notices and so forth, they're giving people notice. So they're going to retire the feature from Office 365. They're going to stop the creation of new Access-based apps in SharePoint Online starting in June of this year. And then they're going to close the service entirely by April 2018. Now, if you don't know, Office 365 has a minimum of 1 year deprecation policy for the most part. Sometimes this is broken, but by far and away, usually they give you at least a year's notice before they turn something off. So this is the case, again, with Access Services. 2018 is the kind of the drop dead date that it will continue to function. Now, they also say in this blog post that Power Apps and Flow is the way to go and build your apps in an ongoing basis. As far as I'm aware, they're not offering a sort of automatic migration tool or anything along those lines to help you get off the Access solution and into Power Apps and Flow, which is going to be sure to bug some people, for want of a better word, that they're taking something away without giving them a nice way to move on to the next thing. But they do have some guidance on porting your application that they've published. So you could definitely go check that out if you're a big Access Services user. Love to hear what you've got to say about this, but it's pretty naff, if you ask me, only because they're not doing something to help you get automatically to the next thing. In this case, it would be Power Apps and Flow. I understand how this happens, having worked there a lot, and how difficult that is to get done, but, you know, that's a small no consolation to those who are using these. And no doubt the teams there will be watching Access Services usage and hopefully proactively working with customers that are using it a lot to help them migrate off it and over to Power Apps and Flow or some other solution. So I guess we'd love to hear from you. If you are using Access Services, send us a tweet or Facebook message. We'd love to hear what you're using it for and what you plan on doing with regards to Access Services being turned off. Now, on to something slightly different. Azure Resource Manager now has a new template reference available. So Azure Resource Manager, or ARM, is the new way, or not new anymore, it's the newer way of basically templating or building a rubber stamp for infrastructure in Azure. So this way you can go and define, you know, what what sort of infrastructure you want to deploy to Azure in a very declarative way using a template, and then stamp that out into Azure. But what's new here, so that part is not new. The templates are not new. But what is new is they've put out some new documentation that helps you build these. That's a new reference for the ARM templates using JSON syntax. And you can go to there and find out all the property values and various things you need to build up your template. This is great because I find templates next to impossible to understand, just because I haven't done them enough, honestly. And there are some template building tools to help with that, but this is a nice reference for being able to build them yourself for things like provisioning databases or virtual machines and so forth. Really nice additional documentation for those of you who are using Azure. I highly recommend doing templating for it. Makes repeatability and so forth much easier. And now you have this new template reference available to help you with that. Okay, Teams. Now, we've spoken a little bit about Teams in the past. Obviously, Teams GA'd very recently, but a resource that we came across, or that I came across recently, was a new website called www.successwithteams.com, and in particular, /bandwidth calculator. This is a reference that lets you go, or documents, I should say, the bandwidth requirements that you would require for Teams and helping to plan for your deployment. So in large organizations, obviously, they need to consider bandwidth between sites, i.e. between offices and so forth, but also between users and the internet and so forth. And often that's really hard to calculate, but Teams seem to be doing a pretty good job of documenting how you can go ahead and how you can calculate the bandwidth requirements for various scenarios. For example, how it will impact your WAN traffic for audio calls, for video calls, for desktop sharing, for example, conference video, things like different video codecs and what's used, what the bandwidth requirements are for those and so forth. Being able to calculate how many users and how many meetings that include video and audio and all those sorts of things, and where the traffic flows to and from as well. So, for example, a peer-to-peer audio call would go between a client and a client, whereas, a sort of a three-participant meeting would go between the client and Office 365, for example. And so these are all considerations that, companies have when planning for rollout of tools and applications like this. And so Teams have published this guidance on how to calculate bandwidth based on the size of your organization for things like audio, video calls and desktop sharing and so forth. So a really nice resource that is successwithteams.com/bandwidth calculator. And in fact, successwithteams.com is a site up there that gives a whole bunch of other information about Microsoft Teams adoption and so forth. Be definitely worth taking a look around that site. Okay. There is a new MVA course. So MVA is Microsoft Virtual Academy, and it's basically free online training from Microsoft, often delivered or put together by Microsoft, obviously, but also delivered by experts from outside of Microsoft in many cases. There's a new course called Provisioning Office 365 Services. So they go through topics like planning and provisioning an Office 365 tenant, things to do with DNS requirements, network requirements, and so forth. Then it goes into managing an Office 365 tenant, talking about Office 365 admin tools, the various roles, what the Security Appliance Center is all about. They have another topic on monitoring and troubleshooting Office 365. Their subtopics are managing usage, looking at health, dealing with change management, and so forth. And then they give links to a whole bunch of additional resources for Office 365, like to the Office Roadmap site, the blog, the tech community, and so forth, to get you up and running. I haven't sat through the course, but it seems like a really nice sort of getting started resource for those who are having to create an Office 365 tenant and get it up and running for a customer. It seems to be targeted mostly at sort of basic scenarios, obviously, around probably not dealing with hybrid deployments of Exchange and that sort of stuff, but very much a sort of 101 on getting started with provisioning and managing Office 365 tenants at a very basic level. So that's definitely something you can take a look at if you're interested. It's on the Microsoft Virtual Academy. The website for that is mva.microsoft.com. And the name of the course is called Provisioning Office 365 Services. So you'll be able to go up there and go find that course. But you get to log in and you get to keep credits for MBA courses and all that sort of stuff. And there's benefits for doing so. Now, before we move on, I'd like to take a short break and to hear from one of our wonderful sponsors of the show, without which we would probably not be here.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid's motto is stay ahead. Its mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of IT. Valid is always on the lookout for new colleagues. If you're interested in all things happening at Azure, whether in infrastructure, SQL Server, Office 365, Power BI, SharePoint, or .NET, look them up on valid.nl.
Okay, moving right along. One final bit of news that we have here from Microsoft is about a new program called App Accelerate, I believe. Now, it is a program for independent software vendors, or ISVs, basically people who build packaged software or solutions or cloud services, SaaS offerings, that sort of thing, to help partner with Microsoft. And the idea here is that it would give you, Microsoft will give you additional technical expertise or access to technical expertise, help you with regards to building your application, obviously on Microsoft stack and technology and so forth, and then help you with launch and growing your business. And I believe this comes from the partner team at Microsoft. And, obviously Microsoft have a motivation to get as many partners building on their stack as possible. And this program is obviously there to help companies get up and running on those Microsoft technologies and also to be successful, because ultimately in a cloud services world, the more successful the partners are, the more money they'll spend with Azure and so forth, and therefore Microsoft will obviously be more successful. Also, Azure will be more sticky and be more useful to those organizations. So the App Accelerate program covers three areas: plan your business, deploy great apps, and launch and grow. And they've got offerings and things in each of those areas to help you drive your business forward. And so it's a program you can go and join. I imagine over time, this will sort of flesh out a little more with other benefits and so forth. And, to help businesses, build their applications and launch and so forth. So you can check that out up on the Microsoft partner website. If you go to microsoft.com/cloud-platform, you will find more about the App Accelerate program. And obviously, we'll put some of these things in the show notes. Now, for something slightly different, over the weekend, I decided I want to try messing around with my Raspberry Pi a little more and get some of our Hyperfish application running on it, really just out of a pet project more than anything. So I got out my Raspberry Pi and plugged it in, dropped in a fresh version of the Raspbian Linux image onto it, started playing around. And for those of you who've listened to the show for a little while, it won't be news to you that Hyperfish, we run using Docker. And so my mission was to try and get part of our application, part of our cloud service, and in particular, one area of it, deploy those containers to the Raspberry Pi, and just as a bit of a test more than anything else. Raspberry Pis are not really particularly performant, I should say. They have pretty small processors, 1 gig of memory and so forth, so definitely not something you want to put in production per se. But there were a couple of things I learned. One is there's a guy called Alex Ellis, I believe his name is, who's written a great blog about getting Docker up and running on Raspberry Pis, which I found, which I'll link to in the show notes, which is pretty nice. It's actually really interesting. He walks through preparing your SD card, getting the right image for your Raspberry Pi, installing Docker on it, for example, getting it booting, getting Docker up and running, and then kind of running through getting your first Docker container up and running. Now, the interesting thing about Raspberry Pis is they have ARM processors versus x86-based processors on them. And ARM is a different processor architecture from x86. Therefore, code that's compiled for x86 won't run on ARM processors. This impacts your Docker containers. So Docker is not completely isolated and standalone virtual machines, right? It's isolating part of your application, but it shares a lot of the underlying infrastructure from the operating system below it. And so one of the things you're limited by there is the architecture of the chip. And if you build and compile code for it to run them in a Docker container, it's obviously got to be able to run on the underlying infrastructure. In this case, an ARM chip on a Raspberry Pi. So fortunately, there are ARM-based images in the Docker hub that are ready to go for ARM architectures. And in particular, there's an Alpine Linux image that's available that you can start running things in. For example, installing Node on, for example, and to help run your Node applications in a Docker image on an ARM processor. Now, I believe there's still some limitations with those Node applications, like if you use a Node module that's been compiled to native code for a particular processor, you're out of luck unless they do an ARM-based version, I think, is my understanding. Maybe somebody can correct me if I'm wrong on that. But anyway, I was able to get Docker up and running on my Raspberry Pi. I took our Node application from our front-end Docker containers. So the thing that serves the front-end of our application is a Node app. I took that, copied it into a new Docker image based on an ARM image or an image that was available for ARM, and I installed Node in it, copied in the source for the Node application, and was able to get a Docker container running a front-end of our application up and running. So kind of a cool little pet project with Raspberry Pis if you're interested. It's actually a really great way to get familiar with Linux if you're not doing any Linux work at the moment or haven't in the past. Playing around with a Raspberry Pi is a pretty cool way to get into it. And I'll link off to this blog by Alex Ellis on getting started with Docker on Raspberry Pi. It's a pretty cool way to A, learn Raspberry Pi, B, learn Docker, and C, learn some Linux stuff. Raspberry Pis are pretty cheap, and so it's an easy way to get into this stuff if you want to, but definitely worth having a play around with just for the sheer geek value of it all. So that's about getting started with Docker on Raspberry Pi. Now, finally, one more thing. No cloud show would be complete without a mention of something to do with space. And today, March 30th, when I'm recording this, is a very special day, hopefully, a very special day for space geeks. SpaceX is counting down to the first reflight mission of their Falcon 9. So this is a Falcon 9 first stage, you know, the one that drops off on its way up and then flies back to either back to land or back to their ship that they have floating in the ocean and does sort of autonomous landing on it. They've taken one of those flown stages, so one of the rockets they already have used, and are reusing it. Now, this might be, for those of you who really aren't into this stuff, you're like, isn't that the point? And you're absolutely right. It is totally the point of why these things have been made, why these first stages have been made to fly back safely and land mostly, most of the time. They've had a pretty good record of that. The kicker is this is the first time this will have ever have been done. Hopefully it's successful. It hasn't launched yet, but we will no doubt be covering the outcome of this in another show. But needless to say, this is a big deal for spaceflight. And the reason it's a big deal is because of cost. These things cost an absolute metric ton of money to put into orbit. And so the more they can reuse them, the better they can drive the cost down. In particular, it's the engines that cost a lot of money. It's the rocket engines that cost the most amount of money. Obviously, they're very, very costly to build. In SpaceX's case, it's the Merlin 1D engine that they build. Those things cost, you know, millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. So it's super important to drive the cost of those down to be able to put more cost-effective satellites into orbit, science missions, that sort of thing. So this is really the first big test for SpaceX's concept of reusable rockets. So it's launching from the Cape, or launching from Kennedy Space Center, I should say, this afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern time, I believe. Obviously too late for the show to go out, but we'll be watching with keen interest and whether Elon and his team at SpaceX are successful with this. Obviously, this is kind of what they're driving towards for long-term viability of driving down costs and stuff to access to space. So we're very keen to see them succeed, obviously, and we'll be watching with keen interest. So no doubt there'll be launch videos and YouTube videos of all this happening by the time this show comes out. So definitely go check those out. If you're listening to this after the launch, I don't know if it's going to be a spectacular failure or a spectacular success, but we wish them obviously the best of luck and hope it is a great success. We will be one step closer to cheaper spaceflight, I should say. All right. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for putting up with me for this week. We will resume normal programming next week with AC back on the show. I'm sorry you've had to just listen to me waffle on about a whole bunch of news about Azure and Office 365 this week. I hope it's been useful. Like I said at the beginning of the show, please get in touch with us. If you have any questions, if you have any asks for us on the show to say, hey, we would like such and such, more coverage of this particular thing, less coverage of this particular thing. Could you talk about your pet project, this, that, and the other thing? Or if you just have a question, obviously we'd love to hear from you. So please do get in touch with us. We love hearing from listeners and we'd really appreciate it. Thanks again, everyone, and we'll see you next week. Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.